Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Cloud Networking. Today we have a very important topic, which is around application disaster recovery scenarios in the cloud. With me today, I have two of the most brightest principal architects of Aviatrix, Dennis Higgins and John Smoker. They have been working with customers for a number of years in designing their networks, designing their applications. They all have past experience working with the in actual customer environment as well. And we wanted to leverage their experience and their learning in terms of how a customer who have moved to the cloud or who are moving their applications to the cloud can build effective networking security design patterns that will allow them to recover application, their business critical application from either one region to another region within one cloud, or from one cloud to even another cloud in a disaster recovery scenario, right? And this is an important angle. DR, business continuity, is an important design pillar for any enterprise network. We were very matured in terms of how things get done in the data center world. People are starting to learn how to get this done in the cloud. Cloud provides a lot of flexibility. Each cloud has their own, obviously, availability zones and regions where things can get recovered much easily. But from an application design perspective, you would have to make sure that from a compliance perspective, from a best practice reference architecture perspective, you have a way to recover your applications, even if it's in a different region or a different cloud. And for that, you need to make sure that your networking and security and your all the design angles are taken into consideration. Obviously, you have a hybrid connectivity as well, which connects your application to your data centers and your branches. So you need to make sure that when application gets recovered, all the connectivity will continue to function as expected. Now, when we talk about a multi-cloud scenario, multi-cloud does not actually mean that you build or write an application where it's one component of the application is written in one cloud and the other is written in the other cloud. That's not how it works. I mean, you will probably build applications for one cloud or your development team. If they are good in Azure, they probably would build something in Azure, in GCP or in AWS, even in Oracle. But what will happen is once you have to build these disaster recovery scenarios, you would need to be able to have provisions where you can easily move that when a disaster is declared. You are able to easily move that to a second region or to even to a different cloud. And then all of the flows that needs to connect to that application should continue to work as normal. Now, you do have certain services that you leverage in a different cloud, because all of these cloud providers are coming up with new services and you may want to leverage those services as part of your overall business solution. But today what we want to focus on is how can we actually recover that application component from within the cloud, across regions, and to another cloud. So with that, Dennis, I want to give the ball to you to provide a scenario, a business scenario in terms of what the requirements are. And then, John, I will come to you in terms of demonstrating this to our audience here.
All right. Thank you, Numan. Yeah, and I think good to mention here. So the demo that John and I put together here for you today is based on a scenario that we actually implemented for a global player in the beverage industry. And they were already using Aviatrix when they came to us and they said, we have a challenge. Our application team needs to make their application deployment capable of doing a disaster recovery across two regions in Azure. And they came to us with a whole set of constraints, because from a network perspective, initially it looked like, well, you're asking me to solve an application problem, but really what we provide is a network service. So what do you need from me? And what they came back with is a set of requirements and constraints that they were trying to solve, that the network team had to write tools for, but the application team couldn't solve on by themselves. So the problem statement they gave us is we require the ability to have to execute a disaster recovery failover to another Azure region in the event of a temporary or long-term region-wide failure in Azure, right? So in their case, they were leveraging West Europe as their primary region in Azure, and they stated that they need to have a plan if that became unavailable to fail over to another region. The constraints and the challenges or the requirements that they gave us is we want to have an active passive environment. So we don't want to have an active-active environment where we're serving the application from multiple regions at once. We just want to have one region serve the application, the CRM application in the case of this customer. But when that becomes unavailable, we want to manually initiate the failover. And I say manually initiate. What they didn't want to do is a manual failover, but they wanted to manually initiate that. It's an important distinction to make. And the reason for that is declaring a disaster is always something that requires some human insight, like what kind of feedback are we getting from our partners, from Microsoft? Is this looking to be restored quickly? Because a disaster recovery is a pretty large scale event to do, considering you're moving your entire estate over to a different region, basically. But once they initiated that disaster recovery, they said, we want to have an automated process because that's the only way we can test this and validate this in times where we are not actually having the disaster, but we validate the disaster recovery mechanism, because it's the same thing as with backups. If you haven't tested a backup recovery, you don't have a backup. It's the same thing with disaster recovery. If you haven't tested that disaster recovery scenario, you really don't have a disaster recovery. And if you test it and it works, but it was a manual process, how can you guarantee that you can replicate that in the event of a disaster? So one thing that was really important to them is to have an automated process. And John will go into that a little bit more when we look at the demo. Second constraint they gave us is we need to have the same IP space in both our primary region where we host this application as in the DR environment. The application team wasn't able to deploy this in a way where they could have separate IP space. Mm-hmm. And that gave us some challenges when it came to network connectivity and routing, which we'll go into a little bit more. But that was an important constraint for them. And I've seen that many times in the field where customers kind of suffer from those constraints. Second thing, they had both external and internal users, and they wanted to use the application gateway that Azure provided to service the users. Now, for external users, Azure actually already gave them a pretty good option that they were using. That's Azure Traffic Manager, that allows them to direct all traffic to one region. And if that region were to become unavailable, they could fill it over to another region. For internal users, that was a lot more complicated because they didn't have any mechanisms within Azure or internally into the network where they could do that failover, for example, on a DNS level. So they requested us to provide some capability to move actually the IP on which the application is serviced to the DR region. And then the last constraint or requirement that they gave us is, well, if that region goes out, West Europe goes out, and we have an express route to that region, we have to assume that potentially that express route will not be working either. So we need to have alternative paths to be able to provide that connectivity. So this little bit to set the stage, I'm going to go into the mechanisms that we use in the next slide, but this gives you a little bit of an understanding of what we're trying to solve. So in this diagram, you kind of see the way that we addressed it for this customer from a high-level perspective. So we have in here our two regions in Azure, in West Europe and in North Europe, where we have our VNet in which the application resides in both regions, so our primary application and then the disaster recovery environment. And what we're doing here is we're leveraging the Aviatrix data plane with our backbone between the regions and down to their on-premise environments, their data centers, their branches, to build connectivity between these environments, which allows us to use capabilities on that data plane to overcome these requirements and constraints that we just discussed. One thing to mention here is also that we separated out the front-end connectivity, so the application gateway, to a separate environment in both regions, so that we can easily service external connectivity and internal connectivity independent from the actual application environment. And we leverage on these gateways mechanisms like net translation, as well as the ability to selectively announce certain prefixes and routes from from these gateways and the ability to propagate that through the transit backbone between regions and down to on-prem to accomplish that failover. Mm-hmm. So for this customer, this was a single cloud kind of request from a primary to a secondary region in Azure. But the mechanisms that we actually use here, you can easily extend it into another cloud as well. So either between one region in one cloud and another region in the second cloud, or in the extreme here, maybe even between three regions. But the point being that this solution is abstract of the specific cloud that you're using. So it's a repeatable architecture in that sense. So with that, let me actually hand it over.
The question I have is, it looks like for people who are not familiar with the Evitrix, right? It looks like these orange balls that you have is more like Evitrix smart gateways. And what you guys have effectively done for this customer is build a repeatable unified backbone across different regions in Azure and extending to a cloud in AWS. And then all of your application environments, which are could be a VPC and VNet, they are connecting to that backbone in a very consistent manner. And then leveraging that consistent architecture, you can easily recover the application into another region or to another cloud. And it does have a connectivity to the data center as well. Is that what you're showing here?
That's exactly right. And so what's not showing on this diagram is all the mechanisms that we have, right? This is just showing the high level architecture. But indeed, what you see here is that repeatability. And because the mechanisms really are a part of that Aviatrix data plane, we don't have to rely on the cloud specifics, and that makes it repeatable. So absolutely.
And then assume that all these smart gateways are managed by a smart control plane, which I see on the left hand side. The customer don't have to manually do any of this. It's automatically programmed. And assume, since you mentioned that there's a requirement for having the same IP addresses space in the other region or the cloud. So I'm assuming that these smart gateways are handling the NAT and complex NAT scenarios automatically for you. Is that correct?
You're correct, Noman. So you actually see here, I didn't mention that, I'll call it out explicitly, but you see that this subnet where the application runs in the primary region is the exact same subnet as we're using in the DR region here. Normally, if you try to build something like that natively in cloud, it's pretty challenging because as soon as you start to do something like VNet peering or VPC peering, you'll run into challenges where you can't have that overlap. But because that data plane abstracts that away and we have the controls on these gateways to apply the net translation, all of that becomes possible. And to your point, yes, this is all managed and controlled by a central control plane. So we have the Aviatrix controller taking care of all of that with Copilot next to it to provide you all the visibility and troubleshooting if you have an issue. And one thing that's maybe worth calling out here as well is that we are not sharing faith between the control plane and the data plane. So that's actually running off in a separate region for that reason here in this diagram.
Great. It's great.
Yeah, and just to speak to the repeatability, all of this infrastructure that you see on the slide, we've built with infrastructure as code, using the Aviatrix Terraform provider primarily, but also the cloud Terraform providers themselves. And so it was really just a matter of really the same code pointing at three different regions and two different clouds. So you're not having to build all of these things three times or separately. You just one set of code and stamp it out three times, and that's where you really see the consistency and repeatability.
That's fantastic. I think infrastructure as a code and automation is a cornerstone for every cloud deployment, because you need agility. You don't need to be stuck with manually handling these region by region or VNet by VNet. So this is great stuff. So John, you want to go and actually show a demo as well for this?
Absolutely. Yeah, let's demonstrate how we can do this, simply here with just a little bit of code. All right, so back to our diagram here. I wanted to I'll first demonstrate both paths to the application. So here from the internet and also from the on-prem data center via Aviatrix Edge to the application. So let me start off with that. So here's the internet. Just going to refresh my screen here. And what this is just, you know, we're coming from the internet, hitting the load balancer back to the application, and the application is presenting us with this page to give us some kind of local environment variables on the screen. And so it's showing you here, we're in Azure, we're in our primary region. Mm-hmm. And this is the server name for that instance. And so very similarly, from the on-prem location, just refresh that as well. And you can see, again, still hitting that primary Azure region, Azure application.
Got it. So what I'd like to show here is you have an application running in Azure region inside of VNet, and then there is a flow which is coming from outside to your load balancer, hitting this application in a normal operating conditions. And then you also have a data center, people trying to access, or users in data center trying to access this. And they both are hitting that particular instance right now. Okay, got it.
Exactly right. Yeah, those, both of those paths. And so you would expect to see, you know, this traffic coming and hitting the transit here, this primary transit, the primary front end, and the primary app gateway as it, you know, traverses through these networks. And so let me just, you know, prove that out. I'll log into our Copilot, our mm-hmm. network visibility application, and mm-hmm. just take a look here at Flow IQ. And the reason why we had the application emit this source port is because that just gives us an easy way for us to come in here and kind of just drill down into this, this traffic specifically. And I'm just going to take a look at the records, and real quickly here, I'm going to filter on today's date. Mm-hmm. And time is, all right, maybe that was a little bit too, all right. So yes. So here you see the records that came off of that, you know, specific source port. And you can see the gateways that we've traversed across for this is exactly what we would expect, the Azure primary, transit, the primary app and front end.
Got it.
So so at this point, let's just go back to, I mentioned it's a little bit out of scope for this demonstration, all of the Terraform that we, as I mentioned, used to build all of this stuff. But I just want to fail over to our DR region now. And so I'm just going to make a simple code change here and run a Terraform apply. And I'll describe what's happening here as it happens. You had a question, Noma?
No, I just wanted to add here, this was absolutely vital, as I mentioned in the intro, for our customer, right? Because this is a repeatable action with a predictable outcome instead of a manual kind of operation where you have to switch IP addresses or change net rules around. So just wanted to add that here.
Got it.
And so here, yeah, I'll point out that the Terraform actions that are taking place, you see here, traffic manager's external endpoint for the Azure DR region is being flipped from false to true. So we're enabling that DR region through, and then the primary region is being set from true to false. And then similarly here in our spoke gateways, we're changing who is advertising the routes to the application. So the primary and the DR values are changing there. And looks like we've succeeded. So let's go back to our application here and refresh this page. You can see now we are from the internet, we are hitting our Azure DR region. And similarly, yep. From the on-prem route, also hitting it.
Got it. So now the application that was being serviced through your primary region, right, both for external and internal, we have almost announced a DR event and now switched the application over to another region. right? So Dennis, in your customer case, would they have certain RTO, RPO, in a way, requirements, considerations, obviously, which is pretty traditional knowledge, right? Where, you know, you say, okay, I'm going to have, wait for these and these things. And if that happens, then I'm going to declare a DR and move the application. And now through this Terraform, you can do it in minutes, or actually in seconds, in a way.
Yeah, so I think most organizations I've talked to, they have the requirement, for example, to be able to do a DR once declared, a DR in like a window of 4 hours or something like that. Yeah. You can see this is actually much, much faster. It's almost close to what you would expect from a AZ kind of failover or something like that. But the main thing that's important here, I emphasized it already, but I'll do it again, is the fact that this is triggered manually. Right, it's an automated process, but it's triggered manually. And yes, the customer will discuss with the cloud service provider in question, like what are the expectations, and in addition, discuss with management, like what is the course of action. And that might be, okay, let's wait 30 minutes, let's see where we are at in 30 minutes. And if by that time we have no visibility on recovery of that region, then we will initiate the failover. So there are certain criteria that they will check this against.
Perfect. It comes in very handy in terms of compliance and audit requirements, because this is a key ask from all the auditors as well. All right, so John, continue. I think looks like you moved over to the second region.
That's exactly right, and just demonstrating that here in Copilot's visibility, that you can see that we are now traversing those DR gateways for that last refresh. And so I'm simply going to do exactly the same thing. And you know, you would think maybe going from region to region is one thing, but going from cloud to cloud is quite another. But it's really the same mechanism here. And I'm going to do that. Wow. And it'll all be the same. You'll see the same changes, some flipping the flags on Traffic Manager, and then also flipping what gateways are advertising the application routes. As Dennis mentioned, just minutes, you'll see that we switch over.
That's the power of the code that you just demonstrated, John, right? Just by changing that one variable from Azure to AWS, now you're able to effectively move the entire application, a business critical application, not within just one cloud, but you can move it to another cloud as well. That's the beauty of the flexible architecture that cloud provides, and the benefit of the Aviatrix platform to allow you to be able to then have Terraform to do this for you, right? So this is amazing.
Exactly right. And here, just a simple refresh. You can see now we're hitting AWS cloud, the DR site for that, both externally and again, internally there.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
Oh, please. Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I was just trying to visualize this on the diagram, right, where your application, which was running in your first region, now it's on the left hand side, right? So now it's basically when we have the options to say that, okay, move it or recover it into a second region within Azure, or we can also say that no move it to a different cloud as well, right? So you That's can right. even have GCP as well, doesn't matter, or it could be Oracle, right? So having this consistent backbone and intelligent networking allows you to do this within the matter of seconds, which is amazing to see.
Yeah, and leveraging the Aviatrix Terraform provider, the code itself isn't that much different when you talk about one cloud versus another cloud, since our control plane abstracts you from the underlying differences of each cloud. But you're right, we moved left to right. You know, we were first in this Azure primary, we failed over to a different region in Azure, and now we failed over and we're running in this AWS region.
Yeah. And from a data center perspective, John, the traffic will flow then through this Aviatrix transit in AWS because the routes will automatically get updated through the control plane to all the
gateways.
And so we will effectively change the behavior of how the traffic flows. And in case when the application moves to the AWS side, we will just use the Aviatrix backbone, part of the Aviatrix backbone, and then connect to the VPC. Is that correct?
That's correct. And here I'm again showing you that we were traversing across those AWS DR gateways. And then, yeah, we're going to show kind of demonstrate one last bit here. You see that the Aviatrix Edge here, the corporate on-prem connected into the cloud is it's connected to all three of these transits, right? It's it has redundancy across that multi-cloud transit backbone. And as we were doing the failover, it was taking the smartest path. So, you know, when we were in the primary, you saw it hit primary gateway or transit gateway. As it failed over, it moved over, and now you see it traversing across this transit. So the last thing I'm going to demonstrate is a failover here. Since we have this transit backbone, we're even, you know, not only are we resilient in these different regions as we just demonstrated, but I can remove this connectivity from on-prem to AWS, you know, for reasons that's gone down. But you will still be able to get to your application because you have these other network paths. You have that redundancy.
Your data center and on-prem is connecting to the Aviatrix backbone, which has different connections to different clouds. So now even if one connection goes down, you still have the backbone up and running that can take you to your destination through a different route. That's amazing.
Exactly right. And again, all of this is built in code, we can tear down with code as well.
That's awesome. It's amazing to see. I mean, I think both the application team and the networking team would, and the ops team, right, would appreciate this flexibility, right, on how easily we are able to do this. And then, you know, DR and business continuity in general is an important pillar, which is, and I think, Dennis, we were talking earlier that this, we are showcasing here a more like a disaster recovery scenario, but this could actually be even possible with active scenario. So we can actually go into a disaster avoidance as opposed to a disaster recovery.
Yeah, there's a ton of things that you can, there's many permutations to the mechanisms that we're using here to build your specific use case. So indeed, active-active, where both sides are active and serving from the same IP address their application, you just take the closest route, kind of like an anycast kind of environment. You can imagine, for example, maintenance also playing into this, right? If you need to execute maintenance on your primary environment that you can fill over to your DR side. And in addition, right now we have just the application being served from those virtual IP addresses and filling them over. So that would be only active in one location at a time if we're doing that active passive kind of scenario. But imagine that you, as an administrator, need access to both environments for maintenance. We can even add additional net rules so that they're individually reachable on their own IP space that is tied to that environment. So there's many different permutations to these mechanisms that we can leverage to, solve for a myriad of challenges.
That's great. So John, is that now changed to AWS?
As you guys were talking, I went ahead and refreshed this page.
Yeah,
I was still able to get to the application. I grabbed that source port, and now as we go look at our visibility here, you know, we still see the DR gateways that we would expect, but now you're seeing the Azure primary transit. Body. So it appears that it has found its way to AWS, but via the Azure transit.
So the backbone is able to then help you out. The Aviatrix backbone that we have across multiple clouds here is able to then divert the traffic that instead of using AWS link, you can now leverage the Azure link and still reach to your AWS application. That's amazing. John, you were mentioning something about... go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, no, just to add to that, this is an example of where you're using that backbone for resilient connectivity to applications hosted in VNets and VPCs in cloud. But this is as much true as connectivity down to on-prem, to data centers, to branches, right? So that multi-cloud backbone has use cases both cloud-facing as well as on-prem facing. So it's very flexible in that way.
Got it. That's amazing. And John, looks like that what you were showing me in Copilot, right? All the flows and the real-time data that you're seeing is basically these smart gateways that we see here. It's not only just for connectivity, but it's providing you the rich analytics and rich data that's allowing you to see all of these flows in the real time, right? So having those smart gateways and the VPCs and the backbone is what allowing you to have more control and better visibility. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and it's giving me that in a consistent way, whether we're talking about Azure or AWS. I didn't have to do anything different to see those flows.
Yeah, I think you were mentioning something about when before, like in a past life, when you were mentioning the online banking application. This could be like so much helpful in terms of
this. Yeah, this scenario really spoke to me. I spent about 14 years supporting online banking for banks all over the world, and one of the constraints of the application was exactly this, where the application was aware of its own IP space. So when you restored databases to other regions, you would have to it had to have same server name, same IPs, all of that stuff, because it was aware of that. And so I wish I had had this this type of capability back then. It was always a problem that we were solving over and over again.
No, that's great. So I think now in cloud and with the platforms like Avitrix, I think it's just becoming more easier. And now with infrastructure as a code and automated way of doing it, it's just in the matter of fingertips that you can build a very resilient architecture with the business continuity that's needed for these critical applications. So that's pretty much it for the demo we wanted to show, guys, and we will publish this. And if you have any questions, reach out to Dennis, reach out to John, reach out to myself, and we'll be able to help you with your own designs and implementation as well. Thank you so much, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Oh, okay. I guess we're done recording.
Yeah, I was going to. Let me just.